Welcome back to This Week on the Kenai with the top stories from Wednesday. Here's KSRM's Nick Sorrell.
The ad hoc committee responsible for exploring the idea of a four-day school week presented some of its findings during a school board work session on Monday afternoon. According to the committee, the initial pros outweighed the cons enough that it asked district administration to create models of a potential four-day school week. No decision has been made, and the school board will not be implementing any changes to the district's schedule at this time, but the administration did accept the committee's advice to move forward by further fleshing out the concept of a four-day school week. The committee found several pros to the shorter school week, including decreased district costs, increased attendance rates, increased teacher recruitment, the opportunity to reintroduce fine arts programs in longer school days, and more. Cons, however, included the potential for decreased test scores, which happened in some districts with four-day school weeks, and concerns about what to do with children on Fridays and families with two working parents. Initial indications were that the committee was leaning toward presenting positive findings to the board. However, after further discussion, it was decided that building a four-day school week model first would be a better course than going directly to the board.
We have to have a model there as to what we're looking at, so we can bring in the people and the professionals to give us quality discussion opportunities. But
said school board and committee member Tim Daughtry. In building models of a four-day school week, district administration will factor in several key components, said KPBSD Superintendent Clayton Holland.
There's a lot of different models out there, you know, how it looks. Is it 4 days for everyone? Is it 4 days just for the students? Is it a mix of those? You know, how do we meet the minimum minutes, you know, that the state requires, all of that. And so that's what we'll go next, to start, you know, looking at that and how that, it'll be a process.
Currently, only one district in Alaska, the Southeast Island School District, uses a four-day school week model. The state of Alaska filed suit in the United States Court of Federal Claims on Tuesday to recover revenues from 9 canceled federal oil and gas leases covering lands on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge's coastal plain. The suit continues the state's efforts to hold the federal government accountable for the costs of its environmental policies, especially when those decisions lead to severe economic impacts on the state and its citizens. Oil and gas production from those leases could greatly contribute to our nation's energy independence and the economy of our state, said Governor Mike Dunleavy. This about-face by the federal government opposes the direction given by Congress and deprives Alaska of our natural resource rights. As a condition of joining the union, Alaska was promised the ability to build its economy through resource development. According to its own planning documents, the federal government estimates there are more than 7 billion barrels of recoverable oil within the coastal plain. Under federal law, the state is entitled to 50% of the royalties paid under the leases. Even if only half of the recoverable oil could be produced, Alaska would be entitled to nearly $25 billion in royalty revenue. This is in addition to the millions owed to the state for its share of the lease rental fees and bonus payments made. A press release from the state on the suit states, once the United States issued these leases, it owed the state a duty of good faith to protect the state's royalty interests. But by canceling ANWR leases, the United States breached its obligations. The United States policy decisions have consequences, especially when those decisions lead to a breach of contract. Here, one of the consequences of the United States' cancellation of the coastal plain oil and gas leases was to deprive the state of billions of dollars in statutorily provided revenues. The lawsuit adds to the growing list of challenges to federal actions affecting Alaskans. Governor Mike Dunleavy has signed legislation aimed at keeping more students in Alaska. House Bill 148 is a House Education Committee bill carried by Representative Justin Ruffridge. The bill seeks to update the Alaska Performance Scholarship, one of Alaska's signature education scholarship programs, raise scholarship award levels, increase eligibility, and add career and technical education tracks to qualify for the scholarship. The APS program began in 2011 and has disbursed more than $112 million in scholarships since its inception. Over the past 13 years, more than 30,000 Alaska students have earned the scholarship. The APS is a highly valuable program that incentivizes Alaska's talented students to attend post-secondary education in Alaska.
In the past, students were notified of that scholarship in their senior year. This new update actually does a few things. It notifies them earlier in their high school path, and it allows those dollar amounts actually to be increased. And so the goal of the bill is actually to have students be able to qualify for the scholarship, qualify earlier, have the scholarship amounts be meaningful so kids can stay in state and get their education, join the workforce.
That was Representative Ruffridge. HB 148 provides additional financial resources to help students reach their educational goals by raising the award levels for students attending Alaska post-secondary institutions. Level 1 students will now receive $7,000 per year, Level 2 students $5,250, and Level 3 students $3,500. The Central Peninsula has an on-site cannabis consumption facility. With the official ribbon cutting on Wednesday, customers will be allowed to purchase and consume cannabis at the Tufted Puffin, the first business of this type on the Central Peninsula and the fourth in Alaska. Owner Randy Wells, a self-proclaimed entrepreneur, first visited Alaska in Dutch Harbor and later opened a fishing charter in Seward. According to Wells, his interest in cannabis was recreational when he was younger, but became a business interest in the early 2000s when the state of Alaska started moving toward the legalization of recreational sales. That's when he and his wife made Seward their full-time residence. Only full-time residents of the state may own any portion of the cannabis industry licensing. Wells, who already owns one on-site consumption facility in Seward, said the process of opening this new lounge was slightly more arduous than the first.
The process took about 2 years for Soldotna, and it took just about a year and a half for Seward. And not only are there the standard barriers to entry for opening the dispensary, there's additional barriers of entry to get the license for the on-site consumption, such as ventilation, safe employee monitoring so that they're not inhaling smoke, and things like that.
Wells is already expanding the business to include outdoor consumption on July 13th and says that next year the lounge will offer a cafe atmosphere. He plans to offer live music, meals, and sandwiches to go, whether or not patrons are purchasing cannabis. The idea, according to Wells, is for the lounge to offer a familiar environment, like a brewery, but for cannabis. For KSRM News, I'm Nick Sorrell.
This has been This Week on the Kenai on the One KSRM. You can find these top stories and much more news at RadioKenai.com.